Hello and welcome to another episode of Tech Chicklets, where we talk about how technology intersects with your life to make it richer, easier, and more fun. You're joined by me, Liz, from 3brightstars.com, and Kim, also known as EcoMom, from DiaperTheirFaces.com. We do this podcast weekly, life events permitting, and you can listen to it from our homepage at techchicklets.com. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes and vote for us on Podcast Alley. If you love this podcast, please tell your friends. We live for your referrals. How's it going, Kim? How's life treating you?
Life is good.
What are we going to talk about on this episode? I think we're both really excited about what we have to talk about here today.
Absolutely. We've got some great things to talk about. We've got some fun news items to discuss and a bit of tech stuff to do and a how-to feature.
I'm so excited about all of those things, and first of all, we've got a little guest segment with
our guest segment. I'm really excited about hearing Tech Hen today.
Yeah. Would you like to listen to it?
Let's have a listen to Tech Hen and discuss afterwards.
I'm so excited, Kim.
Me too, Liz. Okay.
I'd like to introduce to you someone we are calling the Tech Hen, and that is what she has asked to be called instead of Tech Chicklet. And her name is Chris. And would you like to take a couple minutes and just like introduce yourself and explain what you're doing here? And
Hi, I'm Chris, and actually I'm Liz's mom. So that's why I'm the hen and she's my little chick, I guess. So yeah, and as far as being a techie, well, no, I'm not.
And I don't want you to think I'm making fun of my mom without her permission, because we have discussed this segment in great detail, and we have together decided that we are going to call it, this particular segment, Tech Hen Responds to Tech News. Are you ready?
Okay.
Swine flu. What we're most interested in here for our purposes is how we're hearing about it, all the different ways that we're hearing about it that are, you know, technologically influenced, such as on TV, on podcasts, but also on Twitter. There's been a huge mass of Twitters about swine flu and how it's been impacting how we perceive the swine flu. For example, you know, if we're hearing a whole bunch about this very popular topic right now on Twitter, is that generating a panic? Is that because there's a panic, or is that just because it's a popular topic and people would like to be followed, so they are using it as a topic to promote themselves, maybe? And then there's all of the talk about how now we have a 24-hour news cycle, and how, you know, the stories that are coming through are being pushed as being important, or being, you know, that there's a pandemic coming, and that it's all just to generate a panic to get viewers and to, you know, to sell more advertising.
Right. Well, there is a pandemic because it's across the world, right? But as to how desperately serious, well, of course, it's you know, if people die, then that's bad, and but it's
try to respond to the technology aspect of it. Okay. For example, here's my question: do you know what Twitter is?
I do know what Twitter is. I've been signed up twice to Twitter by my daughter, but you know, I just don't have the time. And the thing is, I don't have the inclination. That's really,
so you're not really getting your swine flu information from Twitter,
from
then?
Twitter, absolutely not.
Okay.
No.
Would you even know where to start getting that information through Twitter?
Well, I'm not really that interested. I've got information about swine flu. I don't need to know. I don't need to be.
Where are you getting your information about swine flu?
Well, from podcasts that we listen to regularly, and from, you know, BBC News, from computer mainly, from computer news. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, that is more techie than, you know, like categorizing you as like an older person who doesn't do any tech stuff.
Well, I'm not interested in news on TV, because it tends to be not news, to be honest. It's just some kind of show.
And you don't get a newspaper.
And I don't buy a newspaper. Yeah, but I do look at headlines on the computer.
So there you go. You are kind of are a tech hen then.
There you go, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. I deal with a lot of students actually in my work, and there's an issue over Facebook, there's an issue over Twitter and that sort of things. I can get in the way of certain things, and lots of people, you know, they want to block Facebook, or they want to, you know, prevent our students from being able to use, you know.
Now, when you say our students, you better explain as much as you can.
Oh, I work with a college here in Alberta, and students do classes by web. They do them on the web, so they're synchronous classes. Students attend every day. However, not all students are dedicated, and occasionally they sort of drift off and they're doing Facebook when they should be listening or watching their class that's broadcast at that time. Yeah. Well, it's I don't really like censoring stuff. I've never have. I mean, if there's any censorship. I don't believe in censor. I never have done. I mean, you remember, you saw stuff that on TV that we didn't censor that perhaps other parents might have done.
Certainly would have done. Yes, I remember we had some complaints in the neighborhood. All the children would come to our house to watch those movies. Do you remember that?
Well, no. I mean, uh-huh. It wasn't like a huge crowd or anything.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I remember. Exactly. We were told that somebody's brother had nightmares. I remember that, and he wasn't allowed to come over anymore.
Was that Alien or something of that sort?
Yes, it was like Alien or Terminator was one of those.
Yeah.
Really, really too much for like a 5-year-old mum. Don't you think?
I don't know. You seem to go for it. Or maybe, I don't know.
Just to clarify, I wasn't 5 when those came out. Okay, so do you feel like we've adequately covered swine flu?
Yes.
Okay. People who start Twitter, 60% of the users within the first month do not return to Twitter. Now, there's a couple of reasons. I did a little bit of poking around to find out, you know, where do these stats come from and et cetera. And it's not these stats are not from Twitter. Which means that they don't have access to Twitter's resources to, you know, they're restricted in what kinds of data that they can collect. So for one thing, they can't assess how many people are signing up to Twitter and then starting up Twitter clients that link to their Twitter accounts, and then they never go back to the Twitter site. So they may be now dedicated users of Twitter, but they may, within the first month, have left the Twitter site and may never come back. So that may be definitely be interfering with those stats. And another thing that's a little bit misleading is that's, even if you do take that at face value, it does seem to be an increase in people staying with Twitter as opposed to, you know, some like a decrease. So it's actually looking up, even if you just take those stats at face value. So I kind of like looked at it and sort of discounted it. But what are your thoughts on Twitter and how people grab it, sort of look at it, and maybe like crumple it up and toss it over their shoulder within the first month? You have a lot of experience with this, having had
twice.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean,
explain the process of how you got signed up to Twitter twice.
Try to sign me up to Twitter, I guess.
Dad did first,
yes.
And he put Twitter Fawn.
Yeah.
Which is also the iPhone app that I use now, because I used to use Twitterific, but it turns out that Twitterific is sort of black and cool and styling, but it's just not as useful as Twitter Fawn. And so Twitter Fawn is cleaner. It's a little bit more functional, so that I use that one.
I honestly don't see the value in Twittering, to be honest.
Okay, explain your wild and crazy.
I guess people go from blogging to Twittering, right?
Yeah.
Now, I never blogged.
Yeah, so. Because Twittering is like microblogging.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like you say, like, I'm going down to the store and I saw a crazy sign and it said this within a certain, like, 140 characters.
Right, yeah.
Right, so to me that's kind of exciting. You can do a microblog and people can follow your Twitter and it's like they're subscribing to your blog.
Yeah.
So that is right.
And I know you tell me, well, look at it because then you can see what's going on in right now. And I'm thinking, I haven't got time for this, you know.
But that's just silly.
Well.
Because you just turn it on and it's all just there.
And I think, what a waste of time.
Just looking at it.
I just think, what a waste of time. Blogging, yeah, it's kind of interesting to go, you know, to go into somebody's blog.
It is entertainment.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
and so do you think there's maybe a part of you that just doesn't think you deserve to have fun?
When do I have time to do Twittering? I mean, I do have, yeah, okay, maybe that's true. You know? But I'm not at work.
Is there
I'm
a
driving.
Part of you that after you get a certain age, the fun door just closes?
I don't think I would. It doesn't matter what age.
Do you think
it would happen?
Do you literally see like two doors just slam close and like on the other side of those two doors is Funland, and it's like the doors just close.
So Liz thinks it's my generation, but that's not really strictly true because you know when you look at people like your dad, for example,
you do not need to talk
about
dad.
Who was at the very forefront of any technology. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, but you know. Maybe it is in general. I just think you're skirting. I don't think it would matter. I think if I was your generation, I wouldn't be wanting to Twitter. And I think there are lots of people in your generation that don't Twitter either.
What do you do for fun if you're not Twittering?
And I'm not watching TV.
What are you doing for fun?
And I'm not watching movies.
What are you doing for fun?
Mind your own business. You see, that's what Twittering is. It's people that don't mind their own business.
Well, I can tell you there could be some details coming soon that will have to be bleeped if I push any further on this topic. Okay, so enough about Twitter then. Yes. Have we covered Twitter? Okay. Are you in any way interested to hear that there may be some new technology, or there definitely is some new technology coming out in search engines? And you obviously, Google, the word Google is obviously in your language. It's in your...
group of words
that you use all the time every day.
Yep.
I will Google that, you would say.
Absolutely.
And you just have.
Yeah.
You may in the future be saying, I'm going to Wolfram Alpha that.
Uh-huh.
Wolfram Alpha is this new search engine, or has developed this new search engine called the Wolfram Alpha. It doesn't sound as good as Google.
No.
Okay, but it does sound a little bit spooky because Wolfram reminds me of Wolfram and Hart.
Mm-hmm.
From Angel, the Joss Whedon television show, right?
Yeah.
So Wolfram is already, to me, associated with darkness. And then Alpha, on the other hand, is associated with some very strange element, which is not entirely defined right now, but some kind of powerful guy, which we're not sure if he's really a good guy or really a bad guy, but he's also a character on Joss Whedon's latest TV show, Dollhouse.
Oh, fancy that.
And so Wolfram Alpha, that is suggesting a very awesome search engine coming. Anyway, here's what it does. You put in your search, and you put in something like very short, maybe not the best seeming, like we've all sort of learned how to search with keywords, and you know that if you put like the right amount, the right kinds of keywords in, and you know how to format them and all that. Well, this search engine seems to take that out of the equation. You can just search something. The search engine is smart enough to sort of divine what you meant. And then it gives you lots of different results, not like a listing of pages to go to, but it will actually give you like a visual this, like a map. It'll give you like everything that I guess normal people who are searching that might want to know. It'll give it all to you, all on one page. And so it's a very different style of searching, and it gives you sort of really interesting results, and probably would be giving you more things than you would expect to see. Your thoughts? Evil? Evil?
Well, no. Mm. Sounds really interesting, actually. Yeah.
I think they should call it Evil Search.
Oh, really? Well, actually, that would be a little more catchy, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You know? Dr. Evil's Evil Search.
Uh-huh. I mean, there's sure.
Okay, so new search engine, you're giving it the thumbs up.
I would say, sure. Go
okay,
for it, yeah.
You heard it here first.
Wow, I think Tech Hen is an amazingly good sport.
Oh, she gets her own in, believe me. She does.
I suspect I would have a lot of fun visiting Tech Hen.
So should we take like each story and just sort of
sure.
See if you have anything
to add? Sure, let's do that.
What was the first one again?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think. Quick, quick.
Or we could just take a pause and cut.
Uh-huh. Swine flu.
It was swine flu.
Me and my great powers of recall. So swine flu in the tech world and Tech Hen's response. She's amusing, that Tech Hen. Well, obviously it's bad. People are dying.
I know.
I love it. Yeah, the tech response was really fascinating, though. It certainly seemed and continues to seem to fuel the panic surrounding what is a flu. You know, it's like sniffles and coughs, and fewer people are dying of swine flu than of the flus that have been with us for decades.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that technology has managed to create this panic about a pandemic is fascinating. You know, like Google popped up almost instantaneously with their mapping of the sites, you know, of
the
infection
mashup.
And like, yeah, the mashup. Thank you. Yeah. I needed the term. That was I've only seen them do things like that with like wildfires and stuff in the past. And like, wow.
I also noticed that mashup didn't have any points located in Alberta,
mm-hmm.
which is where I live. And I'm concerned about Alberta. Because I've got kids and, you know, if the swine flu's coming, I'd like to know. And I heard that there were a couple of incidents.
Were.
And mm-hmm. they were related to, you know, like I did get the news that they were related to, like, travel in Mexico. And
mm-hmm.
I didn't see those on the mashup. I was kind of waiting, like, maybe it'll appear. Maybe it's just processing and it just
yeah,
never
like
appeared.
Yeah, like so much of the internet, it seemed to have an American focus. I love my American friends, but I sure wish our internet could be a bit more global.
Well, we at the Tech Chicklets are working on that. We're trying to fill out the Canadian content.
Right. CanCon. Hey, we can market ourselves to like radio stations. They're always looking for more CanCon up here.
Let's do it. Okay. What was the second one? Twitter. What did you think of my mom on Twitter? She's just like... I
Tech
have no time for this.
Twitter is not a waste of time.
But, you know, there is just a huge group of people who are just like, oh, just one more thing to add and one more thing to learn. Mm. And I guess, like, if there is no proven benefit, if there's no proven, if you can't show them, you know, what is the gain for all of the effort of learning it and downloading it and
mm-hmm.
all of that effort, then they're just not even gonna bother. Because
it's true. Well, I mean... you got me into Twitter in the first place. You were like, so do you Twitter? And I was like, what? That sounds a little bit obscene, Liz. And I don't know if you should be asking me these sorts of things. But then I checked into it and, you know, like the learning curve is not very steep. It's pretty quick, pretty easy. And it's one of those things that you can do or not do. Like I run Twitter as a Firefox extension. So I just work away. And every now and again, I glance down at a tweet that's popping up and I'm like, oh, well, look at that. Over in England, our mutual friend Sarah is frustrated with academe again.
Which reminds us of our own history, right?
Reminds us of our own and reminds me that I'm so glad that's not my life.
Yeah.
But then I get, you know, like bizarre ones, like because I follow Demi Moore because I have a lifelong crush on Demi Moore. And I see like these completely bizarre tweets about like her daughter burning mashed potatoes. Now, really, how can your life not be more full if you know that Tallulah Willis burns mashed potatoes sometimes?
It's fun.
It is fun.
Entertainment.
But it can be useful as well. You know, I've had times when I've had a specific problem and you send out a tweet like, I need to know X or Y. And in almost instantaneously, there are answers.
Yeah, that's a good thing, because I do find that I respond to people that I see a request coming along for an answer.
Mm-hmm.
If I know the answer, I do just pop on and, you know, quickly put the answer out there.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a very, I think that's a very useful thing. Can we just take a quick break from Tech Hen and just mention I Am Shopping, which is in a beta version, iamshopping.com, like the letters I and then M,
right.
And then shopping.com. And that's exactly what that's for, is that you basically Twitter an instant message. That's what Twitter is, basically instant messaging, but public.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to sort of put at IM shopping, and then you ask your question, and then you get answers. And it's
when you're looking
question.
For a particular product or wondering if something exists.
Exactly. And I tried this out, and it's in its beta version. It's human powered on the other side. So it's not just a machine, you know, analyzing your question and then sending you back some answers. It's actually people will look at your question, and then I guess they're doing the Googling for you.
Ah.
So they must be, you know, doing the research. However, I've been getting sort of constantly a little flow of answers from IM Shopping, and it's making me think, is this almost like an invitation to spam?
Hmm.
What do you think?
Well, spam, unlike Twitter, spam is not fun. So that would make me a bit hesitant to use a service like that. If I got, you know, a couple of immediate answers, I'd be quite happy, but the ongoing trickle would start to get on my nerves.
And I think the answers have to be specific to your location as well.
Yes.
Because I think people, they do shop online. People who might use imshopping.com would be probably familiar with and okay with shopping online, but
obviously people need those products to be available where they are, yeah. Not just available somewhere. The concept I think is a good one because, you know,
I like it. I would play with it. I'm the type of person that does sound fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, I'd like a red dress. Where do I get a red dress? If I could ask that and get a reliable answer, I would be all over that.
Especially if I could ask really specific questions, you know, like where can I get a red dress that fits a small waist and big hips?
Yeah.
Because that's me. Yeah. And I have a hard time finding things for my body type. So yeah. If I can enlist the help of the Technoverse to track one down for me.
The answer might be, well, Fabricland is over here and they have great patterns that you can customize. I know that would be the answer for me.
Well, I do like the sewing part, but, you know, if I'm looking for ready to wear.
Tech Hen's other story that she responded to, the search engine, I thought I kind of blindsided her with that question because I think that she was just like, I have no interest in this at all. But I think it just sounds, I guess it's a little techie, you know.
It's a little techie, but it's totally fascinating. Like my history is an information professional, right? I'm a librarian. We do searching. That's what my 2 years of grad school focused on. So like a search engine that assumes that it knows what you want and like, you know, deals not only with spelling errors like Google does, but, you know, like looks at the roots of your terms and decides what you're actually after. That sounds fascinating. And the format that results are delivered in also really fascinating. I'm very anxious to play around with it and see how well it estimates what I'm searching for and how accurate it is.
The page is really cool. I'm just trying to draw it up here for you. And okay. I'm going to show you right here a comparison. Of course, you know, Google.
Google
just kind of ends up, you know, listing things. And
yep.
We love Google. I mean, who doesn't love Google?
Indeed.
I'm all over Google.
There's everything to love about Google.
But here's a page, and it shows you just a small little search term. And it's called up like a huge, like really informative map and a whole bunch of other, you know, stats and things and like lots of different references all about the same topic. And so this, you know, by comparison, what we can see from Google, it just looks like there's a lot more searching you would have to do to sort of gather all that information together.
Right.
So I think it's like a really interesting new technology of the search. Whatever the program is that does the searching, it's clever. It's able to piece together lots of different things and you know, put them together in a way that humans can understand.
I think we should revisit Alpha Zuber, whatever it's called, does not have a catchy name like Google, whatever nerdy lids might say.
Dr. Evil's Evil Search. It's nice shades of red and yellow.
It's got that sleek, uncluttered design that I love in Google. Mm-hmm.
I'm already liking it. Really because of
the
name.
It looks good.
And, yeah.
The name is totally dorky.
It's totally dorky,
No,
I
sorry.
Like
your
it.
Love for the name is totally dorky.
Yeah. You're right.
But the name itself, it might need some work.
Are we done with Tech Hen?
Tech Hen was brilliant. I love you, Tekken.
I love Tekken too. Happy Mother's Day, Tekken.
Happy Mother's Day. And now for a Tech Chicklets feature segment, the Kindle. This week, Amazon released the newest Kindle, Kindle DX, which retails for $489 USD. It can be purchased from Amazon, and as far as I know, Amazon only, right, Liz?
I don't know. I think so.
I haven't seen, and I've looked to see if Kindle's available elsewhere on the web, and it seems to be like, because it's Amazon's baby, Amazon has an entire monopoly on it.
So you have to buy it from Amazon. In other words, you can't just go to Best Buy and get it.
Exactly. Okay. So you can't walk into a physical store to get Amazon. You've got to make sure you've got a good relationship with your mail carrier and that she or he is really going to deliver that product.
Okay, for one thing, I mean, just to start off, I got to say, that's got to change. That, I mean, you've got to be able to walk in the store and pick one of these things up.
I'm hesitant to buy big ticket items via the post.
And if we are, you know, a lot of people are.
And the other thing is, I'm an immediate gratification kind of person. So if I want a Kindle, I want it now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
I think Amazon might need to set themselves up a few little box stores if they want to retain exclusive rights to the Kindle. Or they might need to, license retailers to sell their product.
Yes, I think so.
Anyway, so the Kindle, it's $489 USD, and it's an ebook, essentially, right? It's an ebook reading device that's completely unlike its clunky, heavy forefathers. It's an ebook reading device that's 9.7 inches, the reading screen. It features 17 shades of gray. And can hold up to 3,500 books, periodicals, and documents. It has an auto-rotating screen, so like the iPod, it's sensitive to its physical rotation. And it runs on, or well, it accesses a 3G wireless network, which is like really amazing, and Amazon seems to be absorbing the cost of that through the cost of the product downloads. At the moment, there are over 275,000 books available, and the number available is continually accelerating. And the Kindle itself isn't very old. The first Kindle only launched 18 months ago. There was a Kindle 2 launch just 3 months ago, and now we're on to the Kindle DX, which aims to break into the academic market. What do you think of that, Liz?
Well, in general, I think this Kindle looks really cool. And when I heard about it coming out, when I heard about the Kindle 2, that's when I first sort of heard about it and got excited about it. I wanted one, but it was like $386 or whatever. And I, or three, you know, it's $350, something like that.
Prohibitively expensive for us at home moms.
It's a little expensive for a book that you're going to, like, it's a luxury item.
Absolutely.
You know, it seems like that. And so I thought, I will wait until the next gen when it comes out, you know, bigger, better, and cheaper. And so...
But it came out bigger, better, and more expensive.
Yeah. Although Kindle, I have to say that it being bigger and better is a little bit more of an inducement for me to spend that more money. So it kind of, you know, I do want one. It's going to be a big Christmas present, you know, item, Christmas item, I think, mm-hmm. this year. Like, I've seen them holding it, and it's very thin. It looks very thin from what I've been able to see. It looks like a page. It looks like a nice big page. It looks mm-hmm. like it's got the page nicely, nice and large. So you can see, and there's quite a nice large amount of the page that you can see. And it looks, I gotta tell you, I mean, it looks like there's nothing much wrong with it.
Yeah, it looks fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Easy on the eyes too. I think mm-hmm. that's the main part of the technology, is getting a screen that doesn't blind you in order to achieve the contrast you need to see the words.
Yes.
So it needs to be gentle on the eyes, but still white. And it's obviously...
I guess that's what the 16 shades of gray accomplishes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great idea from the point of view of thinking about paperless societies. We do have a whole lot too much paper, and we're losing trees. So I really like the concept. But I wonder how it will work doing things like lending and borrowing and library stuff that one's accustomed to doing with books and that I, as a librarian, am, you know, pretty entrenched in. You know, I have strong feelings about libraries, and they're good ones.
Yeah.
So is Kindle going to not only eliminate the book, but also the public lending institution?
Oh, it makes me think of Doctor Who. New Doctor Who episodes in which there are, like, there was a dead planet. There's always a dead planet, and there's, you know, just a computer alive or something like that on this planet. And so there's this huge library. And, of course, everything in that library is digital. So it kind of brings me to mind of you know, heading in that direction ourselves, where it's not going to be shelves full of Kindles.
Right.
It's just a database, and maybe if you're going to borrow, you go to the library where they've got a lot of files. Maybe you have a membership there. Maybe that membership goes to the library as well as goes to Amazon or whoever is providing mm-hmm. the Kindle technology or whatever. And then maybe you get a download that has an expiry on it. And so that once you're done, it automatically expires. So I do think you could go to a library. It's all computers.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to the counter, or you go, probably not a counter.
You probably don't even have to go. You can probably do it via their website.
Right. Why am I even? Although I have to say, people like to have a library.
I like to have a library.
I don't know. Is that? No, but the library would have other services, because right mm-hmm. now libraries do have other services than just book rentals.
Absolutely.
They have lots of other things going on. So I'm going to still say there's a library building. You go to the library. Maybe you're right, though. Maybe they don't have all the files there physically, but they're just connected just the same way as you would be from your own computer. If you mm-hmm. had an account, you could just do it by computer. And you would just borrow. Maybe you could just borrow the file and it would expire and you could renew it, you know, just like a book.
Yeah.
Why couldn't you do that?
You could. And that would probably work brilliantly.
And maybe the library would only be allowed to have a number of downloads per item, and they would have to pay the licensing fee for that. So they would have to justify that based on how many members they have.
Yes.
So there you go. There's one possibility where a library could still thrive.
Yes.
You could still get books.
Amazon can still prosper and earn money.
And yet the whole concept of literacy in a community could still be encouraged and absolutely, you know, provided for. So
I like it.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think we need to get in touch with the CEO of Amazon and, like, talk to him about his plans for libraries.
I'm going to get him on the horn right now.
You know, we should talk to Bill and Miranda Gates.
Let's do that.
Because they're always making financial donations, enormous ones.
Yeah.
To, like, library tech development.
And they're all the time waiting to hear from the Tech Chicklets.
All talking together. We can really make this Kindle work, and we can help see a paperless society.
I just feel that I need to communicate to our audience that I can see, like, the glimmer of hope and life in Kim's eyes right now. She's very excited. Yeah. And now, but also we had mentioned before we sort of chatted about this topic, you could just trade Kindles. Like, if you had bought a bunch of books and you said, I've got this great thing, you could just trade Kindles.
You could, but you'd really have to trust who you were loaning your Kindle to. I would trust you, but sometimes I loan books to people who I might trust. Not, you know, if the book gets damaged, I'm not worried, because, you know, I probably paid $8 for it on Amazon or $2 in a secondhand store. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't trust my $489 USD mm-hmm. Kindle with just anyone.
Let's look at this from the other angle. Does the book publisher, the paper publisher, really want you to be lending your books to friends?
No. In fact, some of them even have caveats, you know, like fine print on the inner pages that say, like, the book is non-transferable. Yeah. But it happens.
Well, it's a physical thing. It's my property. I mean, there's a difference, right, between the physical book itself and the content, which is not your property. The intellectual content mm-hmm. belongs to somebody else. When you give the physical property to somebody, the intellectual stuff goes as well.
Yep.
And so I can understand that. I guess I can see it from their point of view and say, well, the book is non-transferable. So you get a digital copy. No, you're not sharing it with your friends.
Yep. Which could then, you know, in addition to the $489 fee, make kindling kind of pricey for those of us who are used to buying books and sharing them.
And there's something to be said for the fact that being a little bit looser in the rules could promote. I mean, I think you can maybe study it and figure out if it does promote or if it just detracts from from the whole economy of the thing. But I think, you know, and in the music industry, they figured this out too, that some bands, they give away some music for free, or they give away all their music for free, and they end up making money because people want to buy it.
Right. Coldplay that, or no, it was Radiohead that let its fans download an album and pay what they felt was appropriate.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And they did pretty well. You know, a lot of people I talked to were paying $10 or $15 for Radiohead's album, and lots of them said they probably wouldn't have bought it if it hadn't been available under those circumstances. So yeah. It's smart.
So, I don't know. I guess we'll just have to sort of sit back and wait. And there's bound to be frustration because with this new form, there's going to be new rules that, or new restrictions where you can't get around the fact that you're not supposed to be sharing your books.
Yes.
You know, so you can't get around it so easily. Will we figure out how, or will we just eat the cost and maybe just think to ourselves? Because I know some people think to themselves, well, it is worth the money and I am going to support. And, you know, to me, if I know that the money's getting to the artist, in some considerable part, mm-hmm. I'd like at least sort of 10% of it to get to the artist.
Right.
Then, you know, I guess I feel okay spending the money.
Yep.
And supporting that.
Yep, that's true. I do too. Kindle is targeting the student academic audience. What they're trying to get students to do is buy Kindles and use them instead of buying textbooks.
Okay, so textbooks.
Yeah, and from my understanding, it's disciplines like sciences, medicine, tech, where textbooks
those books can
outdate
$300 for
$300, and by the following year, the students can't unload them. They can't resell them because there's new editions. Mm-hmm. So Kindle's targeting those students, that audience. They're trying to get, and have indeed got, a number of leading universities online to have their students switch to Kindle.
Do you know anything about the difference in cost? Like, how much are they paying for, if it's $300 for a book, we know fine well that that's paying for the intellectual content.
Right, yeah, it's not the paper.
Yeah. So what is the difference then? Are they still going to charge that amount?
I don't know. The article I read suggested that there would be a significant discount for Kindle purchases, but I wonder what the publishers and indeed the authors of these texts think of that. I mean, how much do they see?
Well, for one thing, you could make the argument to the students to always buy a new copy.
Right.
Because right now, I mean, I know as a student, I always was looking for, I love to get the sparkly new books, but, you know, it wasn't long before I figured out that it was way cheaper to get a used copy. So I was always looking for a used copy. So if you could get a Kindle version, a digital version, for the same price or cheaper as a used copy, then that would be the way to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got a few questions, though. Well, first of all, obviously the weight issue. I mean, I took Chaucer, and that term just about broke my back.
Yeah.
It was so heavy, and also that book is so awesome that I kept it. So although I'm complaining about the weight, I love that book, and I would definitely have a physical copy of that book. So there's one thing. But another thing is, can you mark it? Can you highlight it? Can you draw on it? Can you write notes in the margins? Because that's what students need to be able to do.
It is. Absolutely. All students do that. Even those who try to keep their textbook pristine, they put bookmarks in and mm-hmm. these sorts of things. And the Kindle, surely if they've decided to target an academic audience, they must have thought of these things. Although mm-hmm. it doesn't appear on, they don't mention it in their marketing, do they? If those sorts of things are available.
Well, that's very, very interesting. You know, the more I think about it, the better idea that is for students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, ergonomically, it's certainly great for the students. So you've mm-hmm. got the weight issue virtually eliminated with this, not tiny, like fully sized readable thing, but mm-hmm. lightweight mm-hmm. instead of lugging, you know, like, I mean, if you're a student who tries to cram a lot of courses into a day, I sometimes needed to carry 2 bags to get all my books to and from school, and it hurt.
Yeah. What do you think about the possibility that the Kindle might encourage or promote literacy worldwide? I think it might help if the problem is lack of material, and if the Kindle can solve that problem.
Yeah, the Kindle's base price would have to drop, I think.
Yeah.
Because, or I mean, literacy problems are connected to income levels, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly what I'm thinking. So there would, you'd have to think of some way in which you could somehow have the Kindle as part of a social program.
Right.
You know, such as we were talking about the library. How does the library work? Well, perhaps the Kindle could be part of a literacy project in which, say, for example, in a certain community, you just hand them out.
Yeah.
You know, just hand them out and then give them a discount on their downloads. And really, if they're not reading at all and they're downloading, you know, some things, then isn't that's better than nothing?
Yep.
They're still making money, except of course it's maybe a bit too much to ask of Amazon to just hand Kindles out, but
that's when we have to talk to Bill and Miranda again, because mm-hmm. they well, like to just hand things it. Out,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Anyway, Kindle, that's a great thing. We both want one. We want one each.
Yes, and we'd like to review it for you, Amazon.
Mm-hmm. We want a Kindle, and we're very willing to review it for you for no money at all.
Yeah, just give us a Kindle.
We'll do it for free.
We will. We love you.
There's one news item that I forgot to mention. Would you like
to
hear it?
It's kind of a fun one.
It's very exciting. Okay, let's talk about it. Okay. IBM working on robot to take on Jeopardy contestants.
Jeopardy.
Yes.
I love Jeopardy.
So IBM is announcing plans to complete a computer program to compete against human Jeopardy contestants in an effort to move forward with artificial intelligence, innovation, and programming.
Do you suppose the robot will have the same appreciation for Alex Trebek that the rest of us Jeopardy lovers do?
Yes.
I hope so. They've got to make sure that's part of the artificial intelligence. It's got to be a robot that realizes just how cute Alex Trebek is.
The robot will have to be able to have some human-like banter back and forth with Excellent. Alex Trebek, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were saying that it would, but it has to. Whether they've thought of that or not, sure, it can
It's part search of the artificial
for
intelligence.
Answers, but yeah. It's got to be chatty, like the really good chatty contestants, not the stiff dorky guys, but you know.
No, I haven't really done my research here, so I'm just kind of speculating, but do you think that this robot is attached to the internet in any way? Do you think it's like on Wi-Fi while it's doing its game?
Yeah, I'm wondering. I mean, is it going to have unnatural advantages over the human contestants?
What kind of question is that, Kim? How can it not have unnatural advantages against a human in an intelligence contest?
but if it can tap into a database, that's a problem. If it's something that,
but
you know.
But it itself, though, if it's closed off, it must have the databases in it already.
Right.
So it is always going to be tapping into a database.
Then it's just like playing Jeopardy against yourself on the computer, where the computer knows answers to questions.
The skill with this robot is in figuring out the nuances of the questions, or the answers. I never got Jeopardy answers and then having to say who is.
Yeah.
And then it's a question that has nothing to do with a who. Or a what? Or it's a who and not a what. Why do you say what is and then a name?
I know.
I disapprove. Anyway, but of course I'm dumb because everybody else connects with that game except for me. So
I love the game, but I absolutely always call the answers questions and the questions answers. Yeah. And I rarely remember to shout out like, what is? Yeah. I just shout out the question without the question word. Like,
see, that is
one
Niagara advantage.
Falls! I would lose. I would be like, did you see Cliff Clavin on Jeopardy?
No.
Yeah, it was a great Cheers episode when Cliff Clavin ended up on Jeopardy and he totally froze and he couldn't press the buzzer in time and he would answer without doing a question. That would be me, I do love it.
My favorite game shows to watch, I guess my favorite Jeopardy games to watch are the fake ones, the Saturday Night Live, you know, sketches.
Yeah,
that are,
those are
yeah,
good
those
too.
Are
but I do have a deep-rooted love for Alex Trebek, so the real deal rocks my world too.
Yeah, he is awesome. The computer will never forget to say the question. Will never forget to say what is.
There you go.
So there's one advantage right there.
Yeah, because I've certainly seen contestants forget.
There you go.
And Alex shakes his head. I'm shaking my head. You can't see that, but he shakes.
Yeah, just tilt the head, close your eyes, and just shake.
Yeah. I wonder if the artificial intelligence robot could have as good a run as, what was that guy's name? Was it Ken Jennings, who had the, like, huge run on Jeopardy when they dropped the 5-episode deal? It would be interesting to see if a robot with database access could outdo Mr. Jennings.
If it has Wi-Fi, if it has that database access, then it essentially also has, like, phone, VOIP, voice over internet right. protocol, which means that, you know, if it is ever stumped, then I guess it could, like, call a friend, like, on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, right?
Indeed.
It could even call, like, 1,000 friends and, like, take a poll, like they ask the audience on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. There's lots of different ways that this robot could in fact be not as good as the contestants, and yet you would never know because it would be cheating in a very, very sneaky way.
Indeed. Yeah. Is it being developed to take over the world and win all of the money available to be won on Jeopardy?
That's my suspicion, Kim.
I say boo.
Boo on IBM. Boo. No, let me take that back. I love IBM.
We'll approve of their artificial intelligence programs if they do.
I do like IBM. I like their logo. I like everything about them. And we have not gotten to blogging programs, blogging platforms, and how to do your own blog. But we're very, very enthusiastic about that. And we are going to get to it for your friend.
It's especially for Alyssa.
For Alyssa.
By request.
By request. And we have not forgotten you. We are going to do that just ASAP. In the next program, so we will have the blogging platforms and how to start your own blog, number one.
Yes.
Number two, we will also have another segment of Tech Hen responds to tech news.
Yes.
Okay.
Love Tech Hen.
Okay. And number three, I'm going to call him Cousin Garrett for now until he approves of his own name. Cousin Garrett is going to come tomorrow and he's going to show me his new iPhone app, the Ocarina, and he's going to perform some songs for us on the Ocarina.
So stay tuned to Tech Chicklets.
That's going to really rock. This has been another episode of Tech Chicklets. We'll be back next week talking about tech making your life richer, easier, and more fun. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.